It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
A Danny and Rusty edition of Danny and Dusty. If you've missed anything from the first 2 hours, you can go back. You can check us out on the old podcast over on 1080thefan.com. And, you know, yeah.
Of which you're not doing today.
I know. It feels great. It feels great. You know what else feels great? Some fan golf.
Oh.
Yeah. Your local Toyota dealers present the 11th Annual Fan Golf Classic at Langdon Farms Golf Club, Tuesday, June 14th, 15 days away. Brought to you by Henderson & Daughter Windows & Doors and by Philbrook Law Accident and Injury Lawyers. Once again, morning and afternoon flights, although that afternoon round is sold out. Matt's Barbecue will again be catering your post-round meal. If you sign up for that morning round, you'll get some delicious Victorico's breakfast burritos. Foursomes can be purchased right now. 1080thefan.com. Click on the Fan Golf Classic logo for details and the link to purchase your foursome. More details to come. We look forward to seeing you on the course. Welcome back in. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy it. We love it. Right here on your old 1080 AM on the dial, 99.5 HD2. You got the old Odyssey app. You got youtube.com/1080AM the fan or twitch.com/1080AM the fan. Coming up now, we've got your Portland Trailblazers. It's the off season for them. You know, we've got the NBA finals still going on.
28 other teams.
It certainly is. They made a couple of assistant coaching hires over the weekend.
Yeah, no, I broke the news of Patrick St. Andrews joining the roster overseas. I want to say Eurohoop broke the news of Tiago Splitter joining the Portland Trailblazers roster. And these are two, I think, very, very, very good hires. When I started kind of hearing behind the scenes that Splitter was going to join this weekend, I started kind of diving in and asking around and seeing where I could find out about what other potential hires they may be doing. And Splitter is a guy who I think people will remember him for his playing days with the San Antonio Spurs. Mm-hmm. He wasn't this like tremendous counting numbers.
Brazilian?
Yes. Yeah. But he was a great role player on those very, very, very good Spurs teams. And I think if you hear Tiago Splitter, you think of Fabrizio Alberto and you know, like those teams. Mm-hmm. But Splitter's been working as assistant coach now for 5 years, 4 years, excuse me, because he's the head coach for Paris basketball. He took the place of Thomas Isolo when he left and came over to the Grizzlies last year. Mm-hmm. But Splitter's a guy who, when asking around the league, both in Houston and in Brooklyn, talking to people at both places that have worked with him, they think he might be a future head coach in the NBA. The same was true of St. Andrews. Mm-hmm. Patrick St. Andrews, a lot of people call him Saint, but he, both those guys, glowing reviews from everybody that I talked to. And Splitter, he took over Paris basketball, and Isolo had them running their offense there, and it was basically the best offense in EuroLeague. It was incredible. There was a little bit of fall off from first to third with Splitter, and the reason Splitter left is because a lot of those players were going to leave the organization. It was like, eh, time to go. And it's also to get easier to get a head coaching job in the NBA if you're already in the NBA. No, don't be wrong. Like Isolo, like if you're a standalone.
Or David Blatt.
You can get those opportunities, certainly, but with his team not
looking. As long as LeBron likes you.
Yeah, well, in Splitter's case, his team getting worse was not going to put him in a great position.
Right.
So, comes back over here. Sean Eichen, shout out to Sean. He reminded me the Blazers once pursued Thiago Splitter, when he was with the Spurs, gave him an offer sheet that he ultimately ended up signing back with the Spurs. But mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's coming full circle now. But Splitter is a guy who cut his teeth in the NBA as a player development guy his first year, and then on the bench for Kenny Atkinson and Steve Nash with the Brooklyn Nets. Two very, 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 very good basketball minds, particularly yes. on the offensive end and making adjustments on how they see the game, which I think kind of feeds into how Splitter goes about things. And then a year in Houston under Ime Udoka. Again, Portland ties. Most of that roster, I should say not most of, a bunch of that coaching roster is made up of guys from the Portland area, guys that Ime is very familiar with. Mm-hmm. And talking to a couple guys at the Rockets, they credited Alperen Şengün's growth in the 23-24 season a lot to Thiago Splitter.
Okay.
He's been a guy that I think, number one, he's a former big man in the NBA, and so guys are going to kind of expect that. So him getting a chance to work with a young Donovan Klingon, I think right. is something it's very good to look at. What's unclear right now is what roles guys are going to go into. I reached out to folks with the Memphis Grizzlies and got an understanding on St. Andrews and his roles. 2 years ago when he was brought to the team, he had familiarity. He's a part of the Greg Popovich coaching tree, as is Taylor Jenkins. He worked with the Bucks, and I talked to some people with the Bucks who also had the same things to say about him. Brilliant mind, offensively talented, gifted. However, when he got brought to the Grizzlies, his first year there, he ran the offense. Last year, he ran their defense. So he's on both sides of the coin there.
Okay.
He was Taylor Jenkins' number one assistant in Memphis before being let go, and he's a little kind of a bloodless coup, as it were.
Gotcha.
When they made the decision to go down that path. But everybody I've talked to has said the same thing. Both these guys are on path to be, you know, they think to be star kind of head coaches in the NBA in the coming cycles. This is a bit of a change for the Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. They're going for guys that are more on the ascent.
Okay.
And they're clearly looking at guys that are going to try to optimize some things, I think, offensively. Now, mm-hmm. they lost their defensive coordinator type coach in Roy Rogers.
Right.
Nate Bjorkgren was kind of responsible last year with the Trailblazers. I think people thought that he was responsible for the architect of their offense. That was actually Chris Fleming, who was doing more of the offensive game planning side of things. Now, all the coaches are all a part of it, but right. like Roy was your defensive guy, Fleming was your offensive guy. And I don't think it's a secret that they needed to get a little more creative on the offensive side of things. Mm-hmm. So you bring in two young, up-and-coming performers on the coaching circuits that can maybe inject a little bit of life into you offensively while keeping a lot of your defensive principles and kind of what you're going to see going forward. What's going to be interesting is who's going to run the offense, who's going to run the defense.
Like, yeah.
Is this going to be a St. Andrews offense or kind of like which one of these guys is kind of front of the bench? Is Splitter going to be back of the bench? Mm-hmm. For those that don't know, usually the guys in the front of the bench, those are your lead assistants. The guys in the back of the bench are your player development guys and things kind of that are a little less forward facing.
Right.
What's unclear right now what roles those guys have. Now, I would imagine that St. Andrews is going to be a guy that's going to be front of the bench. He was Taylor Jenkins' number one assistant. He's
yeah.
kind of got a little bit of the star. But all of the praise that I got from Splitter, I could see a very real world where both those guys are on the front of the bench and your lead assistants become Splitter, Bjorkgren, St. Andrews.
Okay.
I could see that happening pretty clearly. I think the Blazers are probably going to hire one more coach.
Okay.
And they'll probably have that in place here in the coming weeks because they want to have that done before they get to the NBA draft so everybody kind of has their input and how things.
Right.
Now, ultimately, it falls in the front office, but you want to make sure things line up and make sense.
Yeah.
What's unclear right now is who's going to coach the G League team because Sergey Oliva, the assistant general manager, coached the G League team last year. Uh-huh. I think they're probably promote from within. I think that you're probably looking at a guy like Jonah Herskew,
okay.
which might leave an opening on the bench, which is why they might look somewhere else.
Right.
But you're starting to see the staff come together. They also, last week, they hired Quentin Crawford,
okay.
who was the head coach of the Kings G League team.
Okay.
And I reached out to some folks with the Kings. They all said the same thing. Like he's very bright, but his ability to generate relationships with players is very good. And that was also something I was told about Splitter in regards to Isolo in Paris. They said, you know, Isolo's probably a better X's and O's guy,
uh-huh.
not as good on the personnel, like people side, where Splitter's reviews there were rave. Like uh-huh. everybody's like, somebody sent me a clip of like a quote of him saying, you know, sometimes I just want to hug a player. Like he's not a screamer. He's not a yeller, which very much falls in line with Chauncey Billups. Like, uh-huh. don't be wrong. Chauncey can be stern and he will give it to you straight.
Right.
Doesn't really raise his voice. Like, it's not mm-hmm. really who he is, which is kind of funny considering he comes from a team coached by Larry Brown who
yeah.
chewed them up, spit them out, and left them on the pavement.
Real red ass.
Yeah. But It's very interesting. Both these coaching hires, actually all three of these coaching hires, from what I've been able to gather, these are promising. I think they're heading down the right mm-hmm. path here. And, you know, this is from the time Chauncey was hired until now, Mark Tyndale is the only guy that's left from the original staff, and he's on the player development side. So it's going to be interesting to see how this kind of all comes together and shakes out. But I like these hires, okay. which, you know, it's always hard to know exactly what is going to happen and where they're going to go with things and right. what their responsibilities are going to be. It's a lot of guessing, mm-hmm. even during the season. Yes. Like, it's that's kind of closely guarded type stuff. But I think these hirings are all promising. Like, okay. That's the thing that I like out of this.
Well, good. So you said you expect probably one more hire.
Yep.
Now, with these guys that they've just recently hired, mm-hmm. kind of being young up-and-comers, do we think maybe you'll have a little bit more of a veteran presence? Maybe somebody that has, like, head coaching experience? Well,
they've got Bjorkren, who did only have the one rough year in Indiana. I if you're talking about experience, like, you know, St. Andrews has been a number one assistant. He hasn't mm-hmm. been a head coach at the NBA level. I wonder if they go get that guy, but I think Chauncey now, with 4 years under his belt, you kind of wonder, like, it's actually kind of crazy, like, when you look around the NBA, Rick Carlisle at 7 years or 6 years is, like, the sixth longest tenured head coach.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't. I mean, Carlisle replaced Bjorkren.
Yeah. Like, okay, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's and you start looking at how quick and how fast teams are turning over coaches. Like, mm-hmm. I wonder if the Blazers and Chauncey feel like maybe necessarily they don't necessarily need to have
that kind of veteran guy presence.
Because Chauncey's got. You can say what you want about Chauncey, but he has the respect of that locker room. Those guys mm-hmm. play hard for him. We know. And I know you have your objections, but, like, the things that you questioned, I think they're addressing in as far as, like, offensive ingenuity and as far as the buy-in and the care and how they want to develop, I think they got guys that make sense for that. So they certainly could go get a veteran head coach. I don't know necessarily if they have to at this point because their staff is a bit more experienced than it has been in the past, and I think they're heading down the right path.
All right. Coming up next, that's some Trailblazers coaching talk here. We're going to revisit the NBA Finals coming up next. See what the Pacers have to do to try to rebound from that whooping they took last night in Oklahoma City as the series turns to Indiana and Indianapolis. And then at 2:30, we'll have my Mount Rushmore inspired by my top five cereals that royally ticked off Dirt and Sprague by having Grape Nuts in there at number three. So my Mount Rushmore this week, it will be Oregon movies. That's what it's all coming up on the other side of the break. Danny and Rusty edition of Danny and Dusty. I'm Jeff Russ. That's Danny Meringue. Jordan Schultz on the other side of the glass. This is 1080 The Fan.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
A little bit of breaking news in the world of college sports. Mr.
Literally
Meringue.
During the break, Ross Dellinger said that the Pac-12 and its members have signed their grant of rights deal, which is in part in anticipation to them signing a new media rights deal that will feature as many as 4 different partners. Now, the Pac-12 is still one full-time football member short of the FBS minimum, mm-hmm. but by doing this, they can offer the actual invitation to said school and have it done. And the Pac-12 will live on, at least in this form, going forward.
So let's see here. So we've got our other member institutions. We've currently got Oregon State and Washington State. It's basically the Pac State. Yes, you got Utah State in there. Sacramento State, I don't believe, is there, at least not yet.
No, in 2026, the conference will add Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State, Utah State, and Gonzaga. Gonzaga will join as the non-football member, which is why they need to get the other football-playing member in there to finish this thing off.
Gotcha. So the Pac-12 will live on. And you said it, in terms of, was it four broadcast partners? Is that what I heard you say?
Four media rights holders. Now, one of those could be a streaming partner, like an Apple TV, which is what the path that they were kind of angling towards before. Mm-hmm. You could see Amazon. You could see YouTube. I would imagine that either of those entities would be a part of that, per se, because usually when they do something, they want an entire league, not just a conference.
Right.
But yeah, this is, look, we talked about the Oregon State Beavers and their run for the College World Series, and, you know, Washington State and Oregon State kind of holding on and trying to, you know, reanimate the brain cells, as it were, of the Pac-12. It's the zombie Pac-12. It won't die.
Yeah.
This is good news. This means that the money is coming in. You aren't having to rely on the NCAA title or the Final Four and Elite Eight runs that, you know, we're kind of still feeding the Pac-12. This is guaranteed money in these teams' pockets, and it's the lifeblood of keeping the Pac-12 going.
Yeah. Now, is it the same as what the Pac-12 was before in terms of broadcast rights and money and all that kind of stuff? No, it's not. But it will live on. Oregon State and Washington State will have a home. So that's good news going forward for them. And at least with the other institutions in that conference, it gives the Beavers and the Cougs and, honestly, Boise State a chance to look, at least among those three, they should dominate that conference, yes?
I mean, you would think. I mean, don't get me wrong, some of those programs to have...
They're fine programs.
You know, every now and then a San Diego State pops up and you're like, oh, that's a hell of a team. Like,
yes.
But, I mean, you would imagine Oregon State, Washington State, Boise State are going to be kind of the flag bearers, as it were, of that conference going
forward. The
cream
of the crop.
Yeah, but again, this, when you're talking about, you know, the super conferences, they're the very top of the next tier or, you know, the bottom of that first tier. And like, in those...
Well, let's face it. You got your P4... You know, your SEC, Big 12,
sure.
ACC.
But we also just saw Boise State in the College Football Playoff.
No, exactly.
That's the thing. Like when they have their years, you know, Oregon State's had a run of those. When they have their years, they're there.
Yeah.
And that's the churn of why, like, I think I would love to see that promotion relegation is that in the years that leading up to, whether it be a two-year cycle, because one year is kind of, I think 2 years is kind of how you have to do it. So you get the cycle and you get as Boise State or Oregon State, whoever it is building towards something. They have 2 years to do it, and then you can springboard into it one year, and then hopefully you land in the new conference, the super conference the next year, where you really hit it.
And because, I think you'd want to have more than one season in there so you can establish some sort of a pattern, whereas, you know, you don't want to get dropped out of a conference just because you had one super crappy year, or by the other means, you know, get promoted up because for some reason you had a flash in the pan season and then go up and get your arse kicked, you know, kicked at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So, but hey, good for the Pac-12.
Yeah,
hey,
no, this is, golf clap. This is the Pac-12 staying alive. This is what we talked about, you know, 2 years ago, the path to them, you know, hanging on and not giving up. This is the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. So good for them.
Now, who do they go get, and who, you know, how deep do they need to go? Does it end up being a Memphis? Does it end up being, you know, one of those schools that's outside of the geography pretty hard?
Right. Well, what, Sacramento State was one that had been mentioned before too, I think, right? Yeah. Because, you know.
Which, again, falls in with the state schools and the
Oregon
geography.
State might not like that one.
Yeah. But, you know, Sacramento State's dumping a ton of money in there. I got a bunch of buddies down there in that media area, and they're like, no, it's pretty interesting what's going on down here. And, you know, we'll kind of see what comes out of that. But this is, you know, they may have lost some arms or some legs, but they'll still gum you to death. So, you know, Pac-12's still alive and kicking. Well, Monty
still,
Python
still gum you to death. All right, we got some NBA finals coming up Wednesday evening. Series tied at one. The Indiana Pacers, they managed to come back and steal Game One after being down as much as 15, I believe, in that fourth quarter. And then last night, kind of came crashing back down to earth in what was a 123-107 defeat in Oklahoma City. And so I wondered how much. Which of these two games do you think is more representative of how the rest of the series will go? I mean, do we see Oklahoma City kind of I don't want to say playing with their food, but do we see them handling their business pretty easily the rest of the way, or are we going to have, you know, another Indiana Pacers ridiculous comeback and Tyrese Halliburton stealing the show?
Going to be interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. That's the thing is that, you know, now with 1-1, which team kind of takes hold of the series.
And yes.
I think that's the biggest storyline of game three coming up.
And so, the final, it's a 2-3-2 format in the finals, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, so we got three games in Indianapolis. I believe the Pacers have only lost two games at home the entire playoffs so far.
They're not quite as good a home team as OKC, but yeah. they're there, and I mean, we've seen the performances they've had everywhere, and that's the interesting thing about the Pacers is they travel. The Thunder, they lost one game to the Eastern Conference during the regular season.
That's right.
They've already matched that total in the finals.
Yeah.
So if they're going to hope to keep this thing going, they need to make sure that the Eastern Conference doesn't grab any more of these. And I think every game's important, but I think game three might be, if Indiana gets this, that it doesn't just crack open the door. The door starts opening a lot to the Pacers potentially winning the series. And like, that's when we talked about, how this series was going to go. This is the game that I pointed to.
Yeah.
You know, if Indiana can get one of the games in OKC, come home and handle business at home.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, that -700 for OKC is definitely in danger.
Yeah, and they're coming back home with the series tied at one, and that's with Tyrese Halliburton scoring a combined 31 points in the first two games. So I have a hard time seeing that continuing too much.
Yeah, meanwhile, SGA has the most points in the first two games of a finals in their career in NBA history. I think he's got 74.
34, 34 and 38, right?
Yeah, so 72 points.
Yeah.
Most combined points in the first two games of a player's finals in NBA history. Pretty good.
Not too shabby.
Got nine straight games of 30 or more, which I think ties the NBA playoff record. So,
wow.
Yeah, SGA doing well.
Doing all right. All right, coming up next, we will have my Mount Rushmore of Oregon movies. But first, here is Schultzy with SportsCenter.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
A while back, for some reason, I guess unprovoked, decided to rank my top five cereal choices. Four of the five, great, whatever, not a big topic of debate. But my number three, which drove these two crazy and sparked quite the backlash, my number three is Grape Nuts. But anyway, so that has inspired this new segment, or while I'm on the side of the mic anyway. And instead of ranking them 1 through 5, we're going to call this my Mount Rushmore. So we're going to have my top four in no particular order of Oregon movies, either taking place in or shot in Oregon. So I'm going to start out with, they just had their 40th anniversary celebration in Astoria this past weekend. I don't know how you don't go with the Goonies.
Indeed. And did you see who was out there this weekend?
Corey Feldman.
He was.
Taking selfies on the porch.
Even wearing the same outfit.
Yes. He had the members only jacket.
And he had, what's funny is Casey Holdall retweeted that he was going to be out there. And he had a shirt on. It's a Purple Rain Prince t-shirt.
I thought I saw the top of that.
I have that exact same shirt.
Nice.
And we did Eras Nights throughout a Blazer season. There was 70s night, 80s night, 90s night.
Mm-hmm.
And NBC got me and Joe and Shane some shirts to wear that night.
Uh-huh.
the 80s night, I wore that purple rain shirt on the show. And I was like, I kept that one. 'Cause I'm like, this is actually kind of a dope shirt.
Absolutely.
It's actually kind of funny to see like those shirts, like the old like throwback album mm-hmm. covers have like yes. become like popular.
You see them popping up at Target now too.
Oh yeah. Even. They're yeah. everywhere. But like, I just thought it was funny. I was like, oh yeah, no, I have that exact same shirt. I saw, Rihanna wearing it, the exact yeah. same shirt yeah. somewhere else too. And I was like, me and Rihanna like this, yeah, same, right? same, exactly. same fashion sentiment. So I'm like,
who'd have thunk it?
Who'd have thunk it? Yeah, no, it's, you know, it's like, I always talk about my hip surgeries. I have the same, issue as Bo Jackson, me and Bo Jackson, thick as yeah, thieves.
Exactly.
Same level of athlete.
One of us. another one, my second movie on there. This one also should probably come as no surprise. Animal House.
Yeah.
You can't get a whole lot more classic than no. Animal House.
No.
You know, you got your John Belushi, you got your Kevin, super young, tiny baby Kevin Bacon in mm-hmm. there. You know, Donald Sutherland as the pot-smoking professor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the University of Oregon has fully bought in it. On it, and you know, so they do the shout leading into the fourth quarter at football games. It's a whole deal, man. Otis Day and the Knights, mm-hmm. Who was, they weren't actually, if I remember correctly, they were not actually a band until basically that movie, and that's what kind of propelled them a little bit. But yeah, Animal House.
What
Flounder,
else?
Otter.
I know you. There's one other one on here that like, has to be on here.
Okay. Let's see.
Let's see where we go.
Well, my next one. Well, this isn't the one you're thinking of, but I'm going to go with The Shining.
No, that is.
Oh, is it?
That is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I think the three that you just named are like the three. Like the fourth one is where it's going to get interesting mm-hmm. because, but the three, it's those three.
Yeah.
Animal House, The Goonies, The Shining.
Like, yeah.
It's a lot like, hey, Kevin Love and Clay Thompson grew up playing baseball together. They're from Oregon.
Right.
Jerome Bettis was from Detroit. Like The Shining was, you know, it's Timberline Lodge.
Yes.
Like, it's.
And you have Jack Nicholson in his peak yeah. craziness too,
mm-hmm.
just over the top, and yeah, everything you love about yeah, Jack.
No, 100%
that movie. You got your Shelley Duvall, you know the
creepy
the,
twins,
the creepy twins. Oh my god, yeah. So Red Rum, exactly. My fourth one on this Mount Rushmore. Kindergarten Cop.
Okay.
Kindergarten Cop.
That's definitely like on the short list.
Yes.
Astoria, right?
Yes. Yeah. Astoria, yes. There's a couple reasons why that one makes Mount Rushmore for me. One of them is, for some reason, one of the lines I will never get out of my head from that movie is when he's, you know, in with the class or whatever, and he says he's got a headache, and then maybe it's a tumor. It's not a tumor. That, and then, of course, the little kid, too, that stands up and says, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the two of the things that stand out to me. And then also
Schwarzenegger's best work.
Yes, right? Exactly.
Not a tumor.
Outside of Predator. And
no. Come on. That's where he was really acting. Terminator what's the Christmas movie where he has to get the toy?
Jingle All the Way?
Jingle All the Way with Sinbad.
Yeah. Oh,
I remember there was a line that this is when you had to go up to the booth to buy tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Like holiday movies were a big deal. And you're yeah. talking about like Sinbad and Schwarzenegger when like they were
yes.
mega stars
absolutely.
In Hollywood. And
yeah.
like, I remember there being a line for Jingle All the Way
mm-hmm.
because like that, like that, I believe it came out the same time as like the Furby. Or Elmo.
Yeah.
One of those like mega toys that you could not get anywhere.
The writer based it on his failed attempt to buy a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers toy.
That's what it was. Yeah.
During one of the rushes.
There
and
we go.
Actually, I got to meet Sinbad one time. I think he was here doing stand up mm-hmm. about a decade ago. And he mm-hmm. said that part, the mailman, was originally written for Wesley Snipes. So pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool.
That's just
yeah.
kind of rando fact about that
yeah.
movie.
And the other thing for about Kindergarten Cop for me is I felt kind of a kinship as a kid watching this when he and his cop partner are on the drive towards the coast and she's getting sick and they, you know, you see the Sunset Highway sign that they drive past, but when she gets out to go throw up, it's at that little Hamlet quick stop right at the corner of Highway 53 and 26 where we usually turn off to go head towards Manzanita. So for me, that was like I felt like Spicoli basically at that point going, hey, I know that guy. But yeah, so that's why Kindergarten Cop is the fourth one on my Mount Rushmore.
I'm not picking any scabs here. I think you hit the four that the text line is pretty much.
I do have some honorable mentions
yeah.
too.
What do you got for honorable mention?
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Okay, that was the one that I was like, where do you go with four?
Because exactly.
it's going to be like Kindergarten Cop or that.
I'm interested to see how many people know because there's
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
Now we're talking whole movie, a scene? What are the parameters?
Well, right, yeah. Well, that's what...
Credit given to Oregon.
It was kind of, yeah. Like I said, it was either set in or shot,
yeah.
You know, yeah. In, at least even partially. Yeah, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Cause you got some little young Danny mm-hmm. DeVito in there. Christopher Lloyd also. And then, of course, Nurse Ratched. She was just a horrible human being mm-hmm. in that movie. Stand By Me on the honorable mention.
There you go.
Yep. Because classic, you know.
Let's Hit It, Body.
Yeah, Corey exactly. Feldman also yep. in that one.
Yep. Jerry O'Connell. Mm-hmm. River Phoenix.
Phoenix. Yep.
Yeah. Short Circuit.
Steve Gutenberg.
Oh, was that filmed here?
Astoria.
Astoria.
Oh, that's right.
Astoria. Yeah.
It's weird. I always have Short Circuit 2 in my head mm-hmm. because of Los Locos.
Yes, Los Locos.
Because they kick your balls into outer space.
Yes.
But I for whatever reason, J5 with the Mohawk sits in my head a yeah. lot more
right.
than and J5 is Alive.
I couldn't in good conscience put Short Circuit on the Mount Rushmore strictly because of Fisher Stevens playing an Indian guy.
Playing brownface.
Yeah.
You know, he's been popping up in my TikTok algorithm because somehow, you know, the TV show Blacklist with Spader.
Yes.
He's a villain in that.
Gotcha.
And he plays a really good villain. But like, I've just seen him pop up in my TikTok algorithm for whatever reason. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, that's right. He yeah. did do that. I forgot about that.
I'm standing here beside myself.
Yeah, it's like, oof.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
he does regret doing that because yes. it was a different time.
It was a different time, yes.
There's one on here that probably won't be on anybody's list, mm-hmm. but was like such a formative, like young family movie. I'm going to say one name. I want to see if you get the movie. Michael J. Fox.
In Oregon?
Mm-hmm. Teen Wolf?
Mm-mm. You don't ever see him.
Boy, I don't know.
Homeward Bound.
Oh, okay.
What was? Yep. What does he have to do with that one? Because I knew Homeward Bound was in Oregon.
He's
I didn't
the
know
voice,
he was
he's the voice of one of the dogs.
Because, yeah, yeah.
No.
The
Golden Retriever.
No. He's the Golden Retriever's the old guy.
Oh, he's the one with the eye.
He's the one that gets hit with a porcupine.
Yeah, Homeward Bound, at least part of it, filmed around Joseph, mm-hmm. Oregon, over there near the Wallawas.
Pretty much all of the outdoor stuff that they do, because yeah. I think they end up in San Francisco, but all of the outdoor stuff is in yeah. Oregon.
Actually, I just read, no, San Francisco shots are shot in Oregon. So
oh, they
use
really?
Portland as a fake San Francisco
oh, God.
In that movie. All in Oregon, baby.
I also had, now this one, some of you might get a little bit of a groan from it, but it always had a soft spot in my heart, but Overboard. Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn.
Ah, that's one of my favorites.
Mm. Yeah.
People forget about that one.
Yeah. Those two, to me, they're a great pair. They play well off each yeah. other, mainly a lot of it because, you
also,
know,
it's a great
they were together
movie
for
about
decades.
Kidnapping.
Yes, that too.
And Overboard was actually remade, so it was good enough to be considered, like...
Did yeah. you see the remake?
It was crap, I'm sure.
Hot garbage.
I mean, most are.
It was awful.
I will say, we're talking about not quite just remakes. I was watching, I'm going to Florida in the winter with the family. We're going to go do Universal Studios and all that kind of stuff with the fam. And we're getting the kids up to date on the Harry Potter movies because they're 8 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
They're just now watching the last couple of Harry Potter movies. And then How to Train Your Dragon.
There we go.
Now, they remade the live action How to Train Your Dragon. Pretty much every single one of the live action remakes have all sucked and blown at the same time. They have been horrendous. Yeah. The Lion King one still scares the crap out of me. It's just like, what the hell's going on here?
I will say, we saw Lilo and Stitch, last weekend or the weekend before?
I was going to say, Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon are getting like rave reviews. Yeah. And it's like, oh, you mean you stopped changing the thing that made the animation great and you just went like, we're going to do it like, line for line, bar for bar of the animation and just doing that and making money. It's like, yeah, it's not hard, guys. There's just a couple boxes you got to tick. Stop going like that's, you know, not to get into the politics of it, but like that's why the Snow White movie freaking bombed.
Yeah.
Is you didn't.
Well, that and
you didn't tell the story.
Gal Gadot was just, she was not good in that movie.
I mean, I don't think anybody was good at it, but
you know,
it's either here or there.
That and also that, you know, I have a hard time believing that somebody in that universe is supposed to be better looking than Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
That's
the other part of this. Like, oh, you want to take like one of the 10 most beautiful women on the face of the planet and be oh, yeah, no, she's not that.
You guys know The Lighthouse and The Ring was on the Oregon coast?
I was just saying, yeah, the Ring was on one of my lists of movies here that I did not quite know was filmed like, or at least partially in Oregon.
I will say I'm disappointed you did not have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
Yeah, sorry, my bad.
What?
Wow. Yeah, it was filmed here.
But some other famous movies that shot at least in part in Oregon. You had Five Easy Pieces, Rooster Cogburn. That's an old John Wayne movie, I believe.
What
yes.
was the Nick Cage movie with the pig?
Pig.
Yeah.
It's called Pig. Yeah. Which, by the way, that leads me to think of another Willy's Wonderland. Not shot in Oregon, but another Nick Cage movie. He gets hired as like a janitor to go in and clean up this old like Chuck E. Cheese style restaurant. Like, oh, is that the horror movie? Or something. Yes.
Yeah. I saw some clips of that. That does just look like a steaming pile of crap.
It wasn't bad. It was entertaining.
But like in the best possible way of like,
oh yeah,
you're signing up for it's like campy. This is going to be
the
top.
You knew what you were getting in for.
Wasn't it a PG-13 horror movie?
Ooh, I don't remember. But I do remember noticing, it took me about probably an hour or so into the movie before I went, wait, he doesn't say a word.
Mm. Oh, really?
He grunts.
Oh, it's one of those?
He grunts. And there's dialogue from other actors in the movie and stuff. But I don't believe he ever actually says a word in that movie.
That to me was like...
Sorry for the spoiler, but it's been out for a while.
That was to me was always the genius. Weirdly enough, we were talking about this weekend. The genius of Wall-E. Mm-hmm. The first hour and a half of that movie until you get on the ship.
No
and
dialogue.
I think it's the passengers that are talking.
Mm-hmm.
Conveying with two robots that have no facial features yet conveying emotions. It was like, that to me was what made that movie so cool. It's like you did an hour plus of no dialogue.
Yeah.
And you were locked in.
Right. The River Wild, of course, famously shot here. Good old Kevin Bacon and Meryl Streep, I believe.
Oh, was that shot here?
Yes. Okay. I did not know that Fire in the Sky was partially shot here.
Wasn't that Kevin Costner piece of crap?
The Postman?
The Postman. Yep. Wasn't that shot here?
Yep, it certainly was. You had Without Limits, of course, the Steve Prefontaine movie. Drugstore Cowboy, My Own Private Idaho. For those of you that are aware of like late 80s campy movies, Ski School.
There you go.
Apparently shot at Mount Hood. If you've never heard of Dean Cameron, look him up and you'll recognize his face. Of course, Free Willy, Body of Evidence. You have Brain Smasher, A Love Story with Andrew Dice Clay and Terry Hatcher.
Didn't Harrison Ford shoot a part of a movie out here? Wasn't one of the Clancy movies or no?
I didn't see one of those pop up.
I thought there was a couple scenes from one of those movies that was shot out here. Does that sound familiar?
I mean, I know there was a Tommy Lee Jones film.
That's what it was. That's what I'm thinking.
The Hunted was one.
There's The Hunted. That's him and Benicio del Toro.
That's what I was thinking.
And then also apparently at least partially shot here, Double Jeopardy with Tommy Lee Jones and Ashley Judd.
Oh, man. No kidding.
The Hunted.
Oh, that's right, because it was in the Northwest. It was like a Seattle area. Place where she got convicted of murder for her husband who was not dead.
Yes.
The Hunted is the quintessential. If you want to watch a movie that takes place in the city of Portland, Oregon, but is still like a thriller, watch it. It's good.
Yeah, we were talking about this last week. Colby Smulders. What was the TV show?
Stumptown.
Stumptown. They shot the B-roll here that was just like coming in and out of scenes and stuff like that. The rest of it was, like, all the episodes themselves were shot in Vancouver, BC. Because like you watch them around town and you're like, that's not Portland.
Yeah.
It was the same thing with The Flash. The CW show.
Yes.
A bunch of it was shot with backdrops here, but it was all done in Canada.
Gotcha. I made it most of the show without going way over, but we are way over.
Yes.
Danny and Rusty edition of Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Jeff Rusty here alongside Danny Meringue and Jordan Schultz as we wind things up on this Monday. I have a couple of guilty pleasure TV shows that I watch and I record on the DVR and whatnot, and they're mainly all from the Dick Wolf universe. So like Law and Order, SVU, and there's the organized crime one, which has now moved solely to Peacock, but now they can say curse words.
You like to have your dumb music in your TV watch.
Exactly. He also has another cluster of shows around the FBI. There's FBI Most Wanted and International. Those are all done for the season. So my DVR is basically empty and I'm trying to figure out what else to watch to keep myself busy.
We were talking pre-show, man. And even in the opening, I mentioned I binged watched the Reacher, the newest season. Mm-hmm. You got three seasons there.
That is a large hulking human.
And they've got an even larger hulking human in the show as the bad guy.
Yeah.
I think he's like 7'2".
Wow.
And he's a massive, massive human because Alan Ritchson's like 6'4", 6'5".
Wow.
He's a huge dude. Thad Castle from Blue Mountain State, for those that don't know. There's the new Apple show, Stick, with Owen Wilson. There's only a couple episodes out where he's a former golf pro.
Gotcha.
I think running a golf course. That's actually queued up for me. I've got a bunch of people told me, you're a new golf sicko. You need to watch this.
And I want to check out, is it The Studio on Apple?
Yes, yes.
Seth Rogen, right? Yeah,
my wife and I watched that. That was fun. Neighbors and Friends. That's the other new one that just came out with John Hamm.
Oh, okay.
That's really good for everybody.
I think that's also on Apple. Yes.
Yeah. So there's some
my
good
wife
ones
is teeing that one up. She got a big old crush on John Hamm.
And then they bumped out Stranger Things, I think, again. So
gotcha. I'm all caught up on that.
The new season, but like those guys will all be in their 40s by the time we get that show finally out. They'll be high schoolers in their 40s.
Yeah. So 11 will be 54.
There you go.
Well, that is going to do it for us on this Monday. Thanks for having me in here.
Hey, anytime, brother. It goes quick, huh?
Yeah. Yes. And honestly, yeah.
Breathe.
Now I can breathe out. It's all good. Yeah, and go home and take a shower because I kept sitting over here sweating again.
So sweating in Rob's chair, and Rob's just sitting there like, oh, God, I can't wipe
I'm not sweating
chair.
Out the back. Don't worry about it. So that'll do it from us. Coming up next, it is Prime Time with Isaac and Suk. 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Once again, Jeff Rust here, Danny Marang, Jordan Schultz on the other side of the glass. You guys all have a good one. This is 1080 The Fan.
Take care. Talk soon. Bye.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.